listening to Amanda Fielding, it struck me that the psychedelic renaissance is usually told as an American story, revolving around people like Gordon Wasson and Timothy Leary, and more recently, Roland Griffiths. But some of the pioneering research has also been done in the UK, and a lot of it funded by Amanda Fielding's foundation. For example, one of her scientific collaborators is another guy at this conference, David Nutt.
So I think it'd be useful to start with the beginnings of neuroscience, and that goes back to the writings of people like William James.
David Nutt is the neuropsychopharmacologist who led the Center for Psychedelic Research at Imperial College, London. He sees his work as part of a long lineage of scientists who've studied psychoactive substances.
And he took mescaline and he took nitrous oxide. In fact, I actually think understanding consciousness is as challenging as understanding the origins of the universe.
In 2009, Nutt created an uproar when he told an interviewer that LSD and ecstasy are less dangerous than alcohol.
If you tell them that ecstasy is a class A drug and very harmful when everyone knows it isn't, then why should you trust the government on anything?
Not surprisingly, that got him fired from his post as the British government's chief drug advisor. But it gives you a sense of his commitment to this research.
So I use drugs to explore brain function, and I've probably given more different kinds of drugs to human beings than anyone alive. I don't think there's a class of drug that is used either legally or illegally that I haven't studied in humans. We started off, and this was Amanda's theory, that psychedelics would increase brain blood flow. And the first study we did showed that they didn't. In fact, they decreased blood flow, but in one or two specific regions in the brain, which we now know to be part of the default mode network. And it was completely paradoxical. How could people have these wonderful visions, have these experiences of floating out of the scanner, going to another dimension, going to God? How could that happen without the brain being turned on? And in fact, we were so bemused by that first result that we repeated the whole thing, got exactly the same results, and then realized we'd actually discovered something really important, that these drugs don't turn on the brain, they actually turn off the brain. But they turn off the parts of the brain which keep the brain doing what it's always done. And you turn those bits of the brain off, the brain can do its, can run free. It can do its own thing. It's like taking the conductor away from an orchestra or taking a school teacher away from a class of kids. And they all do their own thing. And from that, some interesting observations emerged.
You're basically saying you're shutting off certain parts of the brain so you can access other parts.
Yeah, you're switching off the control centers of the brain so that the brain can do other things. Because the brain is an extremely efficient organ. It's 10 times more efficient than any known computer. And that efficiency comes at a cost. It comes at the cost of actually being repetitive rather than flexible. And what psychedelics do is they break down the processes that keep you doing the same thing, thinking the same things, and allow connections to be made that haven't been allowed since you were a baby, really. And those connections allow you to see things that you've forgotten and to come up with solutions to problems that you've not been able to solve and think differently about yourself and your life and your family. And as it turns out, when you use them in people with depression, people can come out with a different perspective on their past and a new way of thinking about the future, which is much more positive than it used to be.
So wonder drugs is what you're describing here. I mean, is that fair to say?
Well, I think the use of psilocybin in resistant depression is a wonder. I mean, our study showed it, a single dose of psilocybin is the most powerful, beneficial effect in resistant depression of any treatment that's ever been given, certainly a single dose. It's equivalent to 3 or 4 weeks of ECT. So it is truly wonderful, the impact that these drugs can have, particularly on people who failed on more conventional treatments.
So it seems like there's some big mysteries as to why psilocybin is so effective therapeutically. I mean, is it changing the brain in some way, rewiring? Is it the experience, this remarkable experience that then people reflect on and somehow it changes them?
Yeah, I think all of the above. If you're a depressed patient who's been locked in a set of ruminations about your worthlessness and your hopelessness and there's no hope for the future, a trip that can show you your brain can change in itself can be empowering because you realize you are capable of change. That's the first thing. But I think there's more to it than that. I think for some people, you know, they do get to understand why they're depressed. One of the things we're beginning to get clearer is that a lot of depressive thinking is about trying to stop you dealing with the event. It's kind of filling your mind so you don't have to confront the problem. You've been abused by your father, but you don't want to confront that. So you keep thinking about yourself as being a bad person. And I vividly remember one of our patients who said, during his trip, he suddenly realized why he was depressed because he saw his father abusing him. And it all made sense.
Why would the trip kick in that memory or that realization?
Because he has been suppressing that and repressed. You cannot push things back under a psychedelic because the bits of the brain which do the pushing back are not working so well. So you can access thoughts, memories, facts that you couldn't access. So those kind of insights as to why people are depressed can be really useful in helping people move on because they can get closure.
Can you put the current psychedelic renaissance in some historical perspective? I mean, how does this compare to what we had in the 60s? I mean, are we on the brink of a psychedelic revolution here?
No, I think we are on the brink of a revolution in terms of therapy. This is the biggest innovation. It is the most important new wave of therapy in psychiatry in the last 50 years. Up till now, everything we've done has been using drugs, which are modifications of drugs which were discovered in the 50s. So it's hugely important for psychiatry. And it's even more important now than most people might hope for, because most traditional pharmaceutical companies have given up on the brain. They've said it's too hard to find new treatments. So it's exciting that there is hope for patients who aren't getting better from traditional meds, and that's up to about a third of patients. But of course, the science has moved on enormously, and science has got to understand altered consciousness. I don't think you can understand altered consciousness without psychedelics. So that's a whole new dimension of what psychedelics are bringing, not just the therapeutics, but the consciousness research.
That's David Nutt, professor of neuropsychopharmacology at Imperial College London and president of the European Brain Council.